This show is brought to you by OffWorldDesigns.com. OffWorldDesigns.com is the place where you can find the nerdiest t-shirts and more at prices that won't break the bank. OffWorldDesigns.com offers shirts from all fandoms and hobbies, and even some other pretty cool stuff like messenger bags that can hold your plus one sort of awesome and so much more. You can use promo code GEEKSRULE to get 10% off your entire order. OffWorldDesigns.com is a proud sponsor of ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Did you grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV? Do you like to think you would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of geeks. Games, movies, music, and TV, they're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back, they're gonna save the world of This Week in Geek. This Week in Geek.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to This Week in Geek, and this is the topic show for February. Yes, I realize it's March, but if you've been following my Twitter and Facebook, you understand what's been going on, but I'll do that in just a minute. I am joined by my ever-lovable co-host, a guy who knows what a Royale with cheese does taste like. That's one
Me,
of you,
I guess.
Big ones.
David Double D Dennis.
And of course,
I did have a Royale with cheese once, so this that applies to me, so...
All right, and I am joined, I'm trying to think, how would I describe Roebuck? I am joined by Mr. Brown, I don't know, Mr. Shit.
Brown. I'm Mr. Pink.
Or you do you want to be Mr. Pink?
I'm Mr. Pink.
We have Mr. Pink, Andrew Roebuck. That's right, guys, we are here, once again, brought to you by our fabulous sponsors of OffWorldDesigns.com, BigAtallMart.com, GameAccess.ca, all the wonderful people you can find on the sidebar to our site. They do have some wonderful deals. Be sure to check them out when you do get a chance. So, you might be wondering, folks, why is the show late? And to get serious for just a few minutes before we get into the topic, my kitten, Dr. Wily, the little black guy you always see sitting on my shoulder, has come down with epilepsy of some kind, and it just started a couple days ago, gave us a real scare, and so with that came, we had to take him to 2 emergency vet visits to find out what was wrong with him. We had to get blood drawn and conduct this ridiculously huge range of tests for him, and it ended up costing us almost $1,000 when all was said and done. But many of you have actually helped donate. We've actually raised probably about 75% of his vet bills so far. So thank you to everybody who has donated to help us pay Wiley's vet bills. He's on medication now, has not had a seizure since Friday, I want to say, where he had a very small one. So we're hoping that everything's going to be fine and it's nothing more serious than just a couple of seizures now and again. So hopefully with his new meds, he'll be on the mend. If you guys do want to donate, my PayPal is zerofbi@hotmail.com, or email money transfer is Mike J. Dodd. So MikeJDodd @gmail.com. And if you can donate, that's great. If you can't, completely understand. Just thank you for listening, liking the YouTube video, and just being concerned for what I consider to be my little best friend. So with that in mind, let's do the show we are planning to do on Thursday before everything went to hell. I guess let's start with Dave. What have you been doing?
Lately, just kind of looking for a job and hitting the gym a lot. I don't know. I've been working out a lot. Not to like be that guy that brags about how he works out, but
that's just you right now. You just want to be you just want to be healthier, stronger. That's just your thing now.
I want to be Batman.
You want to be Batman. And who the hell doesn't want to be Batman, all things considered? Well, I guess the whole dead parents thing. But if you don't like your parents, that's probably a boon. that's really fucking dark.
Yeah, we took a weird turn here.
From sick cats to dead parents, Twig, we've got it all. Robuck, what about you? Tell me it's something happier than dead parents and sick cats.
Well, my little puppy is currently attacking my face as I'm attempting to talk in this podcast. So if all of a sudden I get cut off, it's because my face is getting licked and bitten. Ow! Ow! Leave me alone! Stop biting me!
That's love, folks.
When did you get a puppy? This is news to me.
Well, after my other puppy died. So now back to other depressing news.
Jesus Christ, Robuck. Now, there is something I do kind of want to give you kind of crap for.
Uh-oh.
Just because you have her and I don't. Things that have died on me recently, not puppies, thank Christ for that. I found out amiibos can die. For those of you that don't know, and there's like the whole five of you, the amiibos are these little figurines produced by Nintendo. They're able to interact with like The Legend of Zelda, Hyrule Warriors, Mario Kart, Mario Party forthcoming, and some 3DS titles. So I got Rosalina. I was one of the few people in Canada to score one from Future Shop. And through a series of freak accidents, my Rosalina stopped working. And I've tried everything to resurrect her short of Frankensteining surgery on it. And I'm just really sad that it died. So if anybody out there has a lead on a Rosalina at non-stupid prices, please give me a call or an email, feedback@thisweekingeek.net or mike@thisweekingeek.net. I just really want the figure to play in Brawl. Not Brawl, in Smash Brothers, because honestly, the one before my Rosalina died, who I named after 8-Bit Eric from the Game Chasers Circle of Friends, she was a beast, and I kept feeding her equipment so she could literally kill you in about 3 or 4 hits, but she was stupid slow but had really, really insane offense. So I'm really sad that she died, and these amiibo things are like crack. I'm currently waiting for the fourth wave to go up for pre-order. I really want Ness in the worst way because I love Earthbound. And I'd really like to get Charizard because it's a fucking dragon Pokemon. That's so cool.
Yeah.
So anyway, guys, so the topic show for this month, now that we've finally gotten to it, we're going to be celebrating Quentin Tarantino. This is a guy who's made a lot of really cool movies. You've probably seen at least one of them. You've definitely heard his name. And, you know, some good, some bad. And, you know, you might be surprised to learn about some of the things that he's done, especially when it comes to the awards category. I'm actually really, really surprised. So with all that in mind, I give you Dave with Just the Facts.
Academy Award-winning director, producer, actor, and unlikely public figure, love him or hate him, Quentin Tarantino has made a significant cultural impact on the world of cinema over the last 25 years. Often filled with quotable dialogue, gruesome violence, quirky characters, and more obscure homages and references than you can shake a Royale with cheese at, Tarantino's films bear a style all their own, a style often imitated but never quite replicated. Quentin's absolute obsession with cinema dates back to the time as an employee of Video Archives, a rental store in Los Angeles where he honed his art by studying the kinds of films customers commonly enjoyed renting. His writing and directing career began in 1987 with an independent film called My Best Friend's Birthday, which was never released due to a lab fire destroying significant portions of the film. His first theatrical release was 1992's Reservoir Dogs. Considered a classic cult film, Dogs set the tone for later Tarantino works with its violence, memorable characters, and quirky soundtrack of 70s hits. Following the release and success of Reservoir Dogs, Tarantino worked on the scripts for Tony Scott's True Romance and Oliver Stone's Natural Born Killers, and was offered directing jobs for projects like Speed and Men in Black, which he turned down, instead retreating to Amsterdam to work on his next film, Pulp Fiction. Pulp Fiction, Tarantino's masterpiece without a message, is considered by many to be one of the greatest films ever made. It won the Palme d'Or at the 1994 Cannes Film Festival and was nominated for Best Picture at that year's Oscars. It cemented the careers of several of its stars and revitalized the dying careers of others, including Samuel L. Jackson, Uma Thurman, John Travolta, Bruce Willis, and Ving Rhames, among others, many of whom would continue to work with Quentin on later projects. Following Pulp Fiction, Tarantino wrote and directed a segment of Four Rooms and wrote and starred in Robert Rodriguez's From Dusk Till Dawn. Both films received mixed reviews. Tarantino's next project was Jackie Brown, a tribute to blaxploitation films based on Elmore Leonard's novel Rum Punch. His next film, or films, are Kill Bill Volumes 1 and 2, originally intended to be one movie, but Quentin felt the 4-hour-plus runtime would be taxing for audiences and cut the film in half. The concept for the revenge flick was conceived by Tarantino and star Uma Thurman during the filming of Pulp Fiction, and is based on kung fu cinema, spaghetti westerns, and Italian horror movies. Tarantino was nominated for an Emmy the following year for directing an episode of CSI, and his next project was a collaboration with friend and fellow director Robert Rodriguez called Grindhouse, where Rodriguez and Tarantino directed the films Planet Terror and Death Proof, respectively, in a double feature tribute to the lost art of grindhouse cinema. His most recent contributions to cinema, Inglourious Basterds in 2009 and Django Unchained in 2012, are both fantasy revenge epics, one following a battalion of Nazi-hunting Jewish soldiers in World War II, and the other about a slave-turned-bounty hunter who takes on a nasty slave owner in the 1800s. Both films were received extremely well by critics and nominated for several Oscars, giving Quentin his second Best Screenplay win and putting a previously unknown German actor, Christoph Waltz, on the map with back-to-back Best Supporting Actor wins. Tarantino's future projects include a Western homage titled The Hateful Eight, due out later this year and starring frequent Tarantino collaborators including Samuel L. Jackson, Kurt Russell, Tim Roth, and Michael Madsen, and newcomers like Channing Tatum, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Bruce Dern, among others. Also due out in the near future is the third part in the Kill Bill saga, despite the untimely death of David Carradine, who played Bill in Volume 2. Despite Tarantino's claims to retire after his 10th film, or when he turned 60, which would be 3 films from now, or by 2023, depending, only time will tell if he'll stay true to these claims. For the present time, we can all look forward to many future projects from the man often known simply as QT.
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time.
Well, Dave, I'd certainly give you a tip for that one, unlike some other Tarantino characters.
My God, I never thought I'd hear that. Jeez. We have to tip him, though.
Some people just don't like to tip.
So, Quentin Tarantino, I did not know that he got people nominated for stuff. He won awards for screenplays. I was actually watching the documentary from the Quentin Tarantino box set that came out a couple years ago. And just a lot of things I just didn't know about the guy. Like, for example, did you know he's, like, mentor to the RZA?
No?
Yeah.
I knew they were friends. I didn't know he was, like, a mentor.
Is that why that movie, like, The Man with the Iron Fists, like, it's so, like, Tarantino-esque?
Yeah.
Like, you can tell it's, like, going for a Tarantino style.
Which I thought that was really cool. Like, they met, like, years ago, and he did the music for, like, Kill Bill. And I think he just walked up to him and says, "Hey, man, I really like your stuff." And they just started talking. I mean, hearing Tarantino from that perspective of the documentary, he seems like a lot more likable than I think how he's been portrayed in the media as a bit of a spaz. is how I would describe him. But here, it seems in his early days, he was very much like us when we were in film school. Very excitable, very personable. We just wanted to make stuff that was cool.
He's just very passionate about everything, which sometimes I think is a little off-putting to people.
Yeah.
But he gets a little over the top with it, but...
But yeah, he seems like a guy who's genuinely just excited to be here. I mean, there's one story in the documentary where a person who works with him is talking about how he's going to take a few years off to write his next movie, which I think then it was either was Jackie Brown or Pulp Fiction. I can't remember which. And the person asked him, like, you can afford to take 3 years off? And he's like, and you can't with the money we make? And he's still living in this little crappy apartment, driving this little Volkswagen Jetta or this little tiny, basically piece of shit car. Never went out of his means. He just wanted to just keep making movies and all that stuff. And I found that incredibly humbling. I never would have figured him for being that guy. And I think I've had a wrong perception of this guy for years.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's definitely a big... like probably one of the biggest movie fans in the world. I was actually watching some late night show. I want to say Jimmy Kimmel, but Channing Tatum was on it because he's going to be in the next Quentin Tarantino movie, The Hateful Eight. And he said he went over to Tarantino's house and he just like he felt bad about how little he knew about movies, like that he was standing in like the presence of this movie knowledge god kind of thing.
See, that's the thing I think is tremendously neat about Tarantino, because like as Dave covered in Just the Facts, he worked in this little crappy video store, but he would continue to expand his knowledge out of everything. And I've heard once again through the various documentaries that he literally just loves movies. One of the neat things while they were filming Inglourious Basterds is every Friday or Wednesday, I can't remember what it was, but he'd take the crew out. He'd have one of his own personal film reels shipped over to the set, and they'd all have beer and food and watch a movie.
That's awesome.
Oh, like, cool. It's pretty awesome that he even collects film reels. Like,
yeah, like he's got...
Who do you know has a film reel collection?
Yeah, there's pretty hard to like get your hands on. And I don't know, it's interesting, just watching his movies, like, he utilizes such interesting elements to his films. Like, for example, in Kill Bill Volume 1, you know when they're doing the overhead shot of the plane landing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's all miniatures? Do you know where that miniature set was shot at?
His house?
No, the studio that does Godzilla. Studios in Japan, because they were filming Godzilla against Mechagodzilla at like the same time, and he was such a big fan of the series that like he wanted to incorporate the miniatures they were making for his movie. So all those miniatures you see were then completely annihilated by Godzilla.
That's really kind of awesome. That's really cool. The fact that he would do that, plus. I guess that's probably like a feather in his cap thinking, I got to shoot this at Godzilla Studios. Yeah, like just looking over his movies, like over the past few days, I've been watching some of this. I was actually just watching Jackie Brown before this podcast. And you know one thing? I mean, I know he's known for his soundtracks, but my God, that soundtrack jumps out at me. Like Jackie Brown, then I watched Kill Bill's Volume 1 and 2 today back to back. Listening to that, then Pulp Fiction the day before that, Reservoir Dogs. If there's, like, since I've been in the media for the last, like, 8 years, and my friend Pierce, who used to be at the show years back, really got me appreciating audio. I pay a lot more attention to soundtracks now, and I can't think of a Tarantino movie that has a bad soundtrack. Like, I think when they're released...
It always seems to suit the movie perfectly as well.
Yeah, like he knows exactly what he wants, and he goes for it, and he'll find a way to get it through hook or by crook.
Yeah.
And I love that about him. Like, he knows exactly what he wants for his scene. He knows exactly what he wants from his actors. So I guess before we start going over his career and his movies, I guess let's kind of start at the beginning of the beginning with All of Us and Tarantino. Where did this start for you guys? I mean, I'll kind of lead us off here. The first time I heard about Quentin Tarantino was Pulp Fiction. So that would have been, what, 94? I think, yeah. Something like that. So I'm in the 8th or 9th grade. Still, VHSs are a thing. And I remember seeing all these advertisements for this movie. I mean, on TV or in the front of certain other movies that I would watch. And I'm like, I don't know what the hell this is, but I'm really curious. And at that point, I'd never seen Sam Jackson in anything. And all I knew John Travolta from was legitimately the Look Who's Talking movies. So his career at that point was doing shit. And I he was just at this really low point in his career. And Bruce Willis, I only really knew from Die Hard. And Tim Roth, I had never seen before. So going into this movie, I mostly remember the advertisements for the soundtrack, because there was one track, I can't remember the artist, but the song title was Girl, You're Gonna Be a Woman Soon. And then that really fast-paced guitar riff that was used on every single one of the commercials. So because I'm still young at this time, I can't rent rated R tapes by myself. So I have my mom and dad rent it for me, and I have no idea what to expect. And because this is Tarantino, he's a big fan of the non-linear storytelling. Like, it may jump all over the timeline. I had never seen anything like this before. I was always used from movies going from A to B to C to the end, the basic three-act structure. And just seeing this, it blew my mind. I mean, when John Travolta died halfway through the movie, I'm like, holy shit! You just killed a main character! What the fuck? And I didn't know what to think. And then as the movie progressed to the end, and when Sam Jackson starts talking more or less about finding religion and God and maybe changing his ways as he says, just walking the earth, that kind of started making me look at movies a little differently. Because before that, I like Van Damme movies, I like James Cameron, basically action movies. That was my thing. I never thought of movies as anything more than really cool explosions and set pieces. Yet with Tarantino, I often considered him a blend of philosophy and beautiful violence. And then I went out and saw Reservoir Dogs, and that movie essentially takes place in a garage. It's nothing but dialogue, but it's incredible dialogue. And I started to realize there's something different about these characters in these movies. They seem like people, legitimately really snarky people, but there's a realism to them that I've never quite seen before, at least when I was that young. And even watching it today, while watching Jackie Brown, I know people who talk like this. Fuck, I actually think I have a lot in common with Odell when you hear me drop F-bombs every other word. But I don't know, there's just something about him I started to get into, and I've been following his career ever since. So that's how I kind of got into him, but I never knew who he was until I started going into the research for the show. So I guess who's next in the how we discovered him?
Well, I can go next if you want. Yeah. I think for me, Tarantino was first, when you first get into film, Tarantino is one of the early names that people always throw around, because he's probably like the most well-known auteur. And what that is like a filmmaker who has their own personal stamp, and like how any film you watch, you can immediately tell that it's his movie. So when people always bring up like early concepts when you're getting into film about like what a film director is, what his role is, how he acts, a lot of times Tarantino is one of the first people introduce you to. His films are like just mainstream enough where you will suddenly watch it and get 5,000 jokes that you'd never had gotten before. And they also have a level of depth to it where almost every scene that he does is always like another movie. Like, it's from another movie, introduced from another movie. And the first film of his I actually watched was Reservoir Dogs, and I was blown away because I like that one a lot. And I was, and I guess kind of grew from there.
And Dave, what about yourself?
I think I watched just about every Tarantino movie when I was in like my first year of college, and kind of like the same reason as Andrew. It's just like a name that gets thrown around a lot. And I knew about Pulp Fiction, and I had seen the ads for Kill Bill and stuff like that. I think Kill Bill was the most recent movie that he had out at that point.
Yeah.
Grindhouse, I think, was just about to be coming out, like, later that year. And I basically just watched, like, all of them within a relatively short span of time. And, yeah, so I can't even remember what order I watched them in. I think it might have been Pulp Fiction or Kill Bill first, because I watched them with my friend Will, and he, like, I think he had some of the DVDs and brought them over, and we watched them together. And, yeah, I was just struck by his style and how he seemed. Tarantino seems to be like a geek for stuff that other people are almost like ashamed to be a geek of. If that makes any sense. Like,
yeah. Oh, it does.
He likes old, like, cheesy, like, 70s stuff. And, like, he has a collection, I think, of old cereal boxes somewhere in his house. And, yeah, he's just, like, the weirdest nerd. And I think that's really cool. And it comes out in all of his movies that reference, like, old 70s TV shows and spaghetti westerns and kung fu movies and stuff like that.
Yeah, and one of the things that he did, I think he made those genres kind of hip again. And it was stuff that I never knew about. Like, I knew about
stuff that was like your parents watched it, but for you to watch it, it's like, nah.
Yeah, like for example, with like kung fu movies, I always kind of knew about them. I'd never seen any. But after Kill Bill, I kind of started to seek a few out. I mean, I went out and saw the classics like Enter the Dragon,
Game of
Death, stuff like that. And we should do a tribute to Bruce Lee at some point. And I started to look up even shittier directors like the Godfrey Ho and all that shit. Like, you know, just, you know, that weird Asian Hong Kong cinema where it looked incredible. And then I started looking up higher production stuff. And I'm thinking, my God, this shit's really friggin' cool. And then with Westerns, I never really gave them a chance. And then when I found out the whole spaghetti Western thing, I'm like, man, this is like an action movie, but with six shooters. Why did I not like this before? And I think that's a genre that gets very shortchanged because, I don't know, when you really kind of look at it, Westerns are actually kind of fucking badass.
Westerners are great.
So I guess with his movies, I guess what's everybody's favorite?
Ooh, that's the big question.
I can do mine fairly easy quickly.
Okay.
For me, it's Inglourious Basterds. I think Inglourious Basterds is his masterpiece. I don't think there's a scene in that movie that it lags or is bad or has any imperfections to it. And he pulls from really great movies to make his movie. Because with Tarantino, he's almost like a Frankenstein where he kind of mismatches a bunch of really great movies to make something new. And Inglourious Basterds just is perfect.
Inglourious Basterds, for me, I thought dragged in a few places, but maybe I wasn't in the right mood, because that's something I actually kind of noticed today. I was watching Kill Bill's Volume 1 and 2 back-to-back, and I've always, for a long time, really didn't like Kill Bill Volume 2 outside of maybe the ending for it, and I'm watching it today thinking, you know what? If you watch these back-to-back, it's really well-paced.
You know, surprisingly enough, Kill Bill Volume 2 is my second favorite.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't like it for years.
I think Kill Bill Volume 2 has kind of grown on me over the years. I was the same way. I liked Volume 1 a lot more. I think now, if anything, I might like Volume 2 a little bit more than Volume 1. I think there's more actual character development in Volume 2, whereas Volume 1 is more just like action and blood and fighting, which is still awesome, but it kind of slows down a lot in Volume 2. It's weird because apparently it was intended to be one long movie, but I almost can't imagine it being one long movie because they're actually so different.
Well, there was supposed to be a cut, and I think it was shown, called The Whole Bloody Affair or something for Kill Bill, where they do show it as one thing.
Yeah.
Kind of wish
it has added scenes and stuff.
I always remember there was one scene, I've never seen the scene, but I've seen stills out of it, where randomly Michael Jai White shows up and fights David Carradine or something.
Really?
It's supposed to be like part of Bill's backstory sort of thing, but I've never seen the scene. Like, if I'm wrong, call me on it. But I remember
that. I honestly don't know, so.
But
I mean, that would be amazing if that was even filmed.
There was another thing that of his, and I hate to rag on this, but I cannot stand this movie. I may have to watch it again now that I've kind of had the influx of knowledge that I've acquired over the last week or so, and that's Death Proof. The first time I saw that, I'm like, why does this suck?
I don't know. I haven't even seen Death Proof. It's the only Tarantino film I've never seen, and I don't even want to see it.
It's just
I don't like Death Proof that much either. It just, you can sum up the whole movie in like two sentences, basically.
Crazy guy.
Here
with
it is.
Car.
Here's death. Yeah, here's Death Proof. There's a crazy guy with a car, and he kills people in his car, and then they kill him. The end.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Not much happens in between. It takes 2 hours for that to happen. Of people mostly just sitting around and talking about other car movies that you would rather watch instead of Death Proof.
Like, honestly, the last half hour of that movie, I think, is pretty cool. But it's everything
the
leading up to
it. The chase scene at the end is pretty awesome. Like, the stunts that they do.
But it's just, the characters are so, you just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, I think that was the problem, too, is Tarantino's movies are known for these really larger-than-life, super memorable characters, but the big problem with Death Proof isn't how plotless it is, because really, none of the Tarantino's movies have, like, a super in-depth plot, but it's just that the characters in it were boring. Like, you don't really care about any of them that much.
And it sucks, because they got some really good people in that movie. I mean, you got Kurt Russell as Stuntman Mike, and arguably he's the most interesting. You have Zoe Bell, who's the stunt woman from like a lot of his movies. I know she did Kill Bill.
He got Zoe Bell to be it. Yeah, to actually like act in it.
But there's just, I mean, you got Rosario Dawson. It's not like she's terrible. Rose McGowan. You know, like there are people in this movie that can legitimately do some amazing stuff.
Yeah,
but Jesus Christ, but it just never starts.
All the characters are, yeah.
And like I said, I feel terrible for saying that. Now, one movie he did in the 90s, I didn't know was him until pretty much IMDb became a thing, was Four Rooms. And he does a segment called The Man from Hollywood. Love that movie.
Oh, man, Four Rooms is like my least favorite Tarantino film. I hate that movie.
I like the last two segments of Four Rooms, but it's basically, if anyone was watching that movie, I would say just skip the first two rooms, go right to Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino's rooms, because they're the only ones worth watching, Rodriguez's. I think his was hilarious.
Was that the one with the dead hooker?
Yeah, it's the two kids that find a dead hooker under their bed.
So, yeah, there's the dead hooker. The witches one is kind of weird.
Yeah,
that's like kind of a skippable.
It does, but it does give some interesting insight into Tim Roth's character, Tim Roth, which honestly I didn't realize how funny he was until I saw that movie. But yeah, honestly, I do recommend people check that out. I would say sit through it all the first time around, and if you go back and subsequently,
can
skip it.
Give it all a chance, but. If I ever watched it again, I would probably just go right to the last two rooms.
Another one that of his that I really liked, and Andrew said it was probably one of his favorites, was Jackie Brown. I didn't like this as a kid. Now I really do.
I've only seen Jackie Brown once, and I thought it was okay. Like, it didn't really do that much for me. I think if anyone else directed it, it would have been awesome, but for a Tarantino movie, it's just okay for me.
What's interesting about Jackie Brown is that the character of Birdman actor plays. What's his name?
Michael Keaton?
Michael Keaton plays a role in Jackie Brown, and he plays that and he plays the exact same role in Steven Soderbergh's movie. Looking it up right now. It's with
I can't think of a Steven Soderbergh movie that has Michael Keaton in it.
Yeah, it's like one of his early movies. I'm finding it right now. Somebody vent while I'm doing like, that.
Out of Sight?
Out of Sight. There it is. Yeah. Out of Sight. And they play the exact same character because they're both based off of Elmore Leonard novels.
That's kind of awesome, actually. Just the fact that they do cross-pollinate in another film universe, so to speak.
Speaking of which, a lot of people don't realize that Tarantino's movies actually kind of take place in their own weird little universe.
So kind of,
and
like,
that there are characters. Yeah, kind of like Kevin Smith's early movies. But from what I read online, there's like the movie universe, which is stuff like Pulp Fiction, Reservoir Dogs, Jackie Brown, that's kind of taking place in modern times. And there's characters that are like related to each other and stuff. And then there's like the movie universe, which is like movies that exist within the movie universe.
For example, stuff like
Django Unchained, for instance, would be a movie that the characters in like Pulp Fiction, for instance, could go to the theater and watch.
Oh, weird. I had no idea.
But like Inglourious really Bastards is like something that actually happened in that universe.
Like in history. Like,
in history.
Maybe Django Unchained actually did happen. I don't know about Django Unchained, but I know that. I think Kill Bill is one of the movies, and same thing with Death Proof is like one of the movies that they would actually be watching in his movie universe.
I could see that.
Because they're a little bit more over the top.
Yeah, and it also explains why movies are so important in his universe, is because that's how they won World War II, with a movie theater.
In a movie theater.
And that's how they killed Hitler. And like that's the reason why everybody in his movies like are obsessed with movies, because it's so important, they've actually shaped history.
Yeah, at some point someone's gonna write a book explaining the whole Tarantino universe and the history behind it.
I'm actually kind of surprised no one has yet.
Probably Tarantino himself is gonna write a book, because he keeps talking about quitting directing and becoming a writer.
I'd really like to see what like he has to say. Like, I really kind of want to just kind of spend an afternoon with that guy and just kind of hear what he has to say. Like,
go grab coffee with him somewhere. Go to Tim Hortons with Quentin Tarantino.
This needs to happen. And Quentin, if you're listening,
come to Canada and go to Tim Hortons with us.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
At next year's TIFF.
And then Bill Murray both show up at your door. They're like, hey, we both heard episodes regarding us. Let's hang out.
That would be so cool.
And we want to go to Tim Hortons with you.
Honestly, I just want to hear him talk about, like, Kill Bill stuff. I mean, like, I guess, without a doubt, that's my favorite Tarantino movies, Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2. I remember seeing them both in theaters back in 2004 and 2008 and being so excited about it. And the people I went with at the time just saw it as just a movie. I saw it as something a little bit more. I mean, I went out and got...
It was like an experience, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was.
More than just a movie.
Yeah, I mean, the only other movie I could think that touched me in that special way as an experience was the Matrix series of movies. But this was something a little bit deeper for me, because I don't know, just there's something about the bride and all the characters that inhabit the Kill Bill universe I really, really liked. That's a role Bud, he plays Sidewinder, Bill's brother in those movies. And I really liked him in that, despite him only having a very small section of those movies. But I really liked it. That's the first movie I really ever saw Lucy Liu in, where she wasn't a Charlie's Friggin' Angel or something. Daryl Hannah, she was the woman from Splash, wasn't she? I want to say yes. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, so I'd never seen her in anything outside of that. So, and just one thing that really attracted me to that movie is the soundtrack to it. I mean, there's there there's that Kill Bill song whose name I completely forget, but you know what I'm talking about. That slow guitar riff, and then it brings in... Everybody used that. Everybody used that for like
that was like Taylor.
The kill alarm. that got so overused every internet video.
Yep, and like I loved it. And there's another one. I know it's the song that plays when the bride's fighting Oren outside. And it's the very much that homage to Lady Snowblood. And the song is called Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood. You only hear a few minutes in the movie, but that song itself is like 10 minutes long. And it's awesome. So cool. It's like, I dare I say beautiful in a weird way. It's just, I don't know. I've never had a song gel so well with a scene where it's almost magical in the way that it fits with it. And I never would have associated something kind of Latin-based and like Japanese swordplay. Never would have ever seen that combination coming. And another group that I liked it from the movie, they're an actual Japanese group called the 5678s. They're playing in the House of Blue Leaves, or I think that's what it's called. They're the band that's playing the 60s surfer style music. Go check out some of their stuff.
And then I think that song was used in an iPod commercial after that, and then you heard it everywhere because of that.
Yeah, like right now, I know it's like some Kia commercial or something. And that's kind of what got me thinking, hey, I recognize this song, but from where? And like, yeah, it's just, it's there it friggin' is. And then it made popular again the Flight of the Bumblebee, which was from the Green Hornet TV series, though I'm pretty sure it had been around before that. But yeah, like, it's there's so many cool things about Kill Bill, watching it again today. Kill Bill Volume 1 friggin' flies by. Like, it seems like an hour has passed by. Like, yeah, all right, you've been here for two. What? It flows by so well. There are no boring parts in that movie. And if you watch it directly after, you watch Kill Bill Volume 2 directly after it, it seems like one seamless experience. And I kind of wish they did more with her master, Pai Mei, played by Gordon Liu. I really liked him in that movie.
Pai Mei is great. I saw this great thing on Cracked that was like saying that Nick Fury from the Avengers is actually the same character as Sam Jackson's character from Pulp Fiction, and he got trained by Pai Mei, and that's how he lost his eye.
What? Interesting fan theory.
It could fit at the end of Winter Soldier that quote is on his tombstone.
That's true. That's right.
What quote? I haven't seen that movie in a while.
Oh, in Winter Soldier, the Bible verse that he says in Pulp
Ezekiel,
Fiction is on the... Yeah. Is on...
Even though that verse isn't in the Bible.
Yep.
I think that's pretty kick-ass. And in essence, Pai Mei is part of the Marvel Universe. No. He could train Iron Fist, I'm just saying. Screw the Ancient One. I want Pai Mei. There's just so much I like about it. Like, watching the sword play, and I'm pretty sure those guys had worked on the Matrix movies, the fight choreographer. One thing that I thought was, it pissed me off the first time I saw it, was during the fight with the crazy 88s, it goes into black and white. Turns out that was a trick that was used by kung fu movies in the 60s, 70s, and 80s to get shown on American TV. That's how they got around censors. They just turned it to black and white. And I'm thinking, holy shit, that's really cool. And when I was younger, I didn't like that. I'm like, I want to see the blood. But watching it now, I'm thinking, man, that actually makes it about 10 times cooler. And then when she is in the room and it's the fight where it's just all shadows, and she blinks and it goes back in the color. It's little things like that I think are really, really friggin' sick. And one of my favorite characters he's ever had in the movies, and I really wish David Carradine had not died, because there was supposed to be a prequel movie focusing on Bill. And
that's awesome.
I love David Carradine in this movie. Like, because he's just, I don't know, he's very much like that dude from Kung Fu, but the asshole version of him.
I love that idea. That he's the same guy, but he's just become a dick.
But it's,
with time and alcohol.
Yep, he's just like, I'm going to be an assassin. But it's just, I don't know, I really love David Carradine, and I'm really sad that obviously he's no longer with us now. But I don't know, and that's another thing to mention about Tarantino, how he casts his movies.
Yeah, he always picks, he picks either people you don't know about, and then they like become famous after that, like Christoph Waltz, or he picks people that their careers are kind of floundering, or they're doing a lot of like B movies or like crappy made for TV movies kind of thing, and he's like, hey, yeah, be in my awesome movie. He doesn't pick, yeah, like, I mean, he still casts people like Brad Pitt and whatnot, but he doesn't only choose people who are really popular right now.
Yeah, a great example.
I wish more people would do that.
Oh, yeah, sorry, I cut you off there. A good example of that is actually him casting Sonny Chiba in the Kill Bill Volume 1, because Sonny Chiba's the guy who makes the sword. And Sonny Chiba is actually the guy who starred in all the Street Fighter movies, which is like this really cheesy kung fu movies. And they're actually the movies that are being watched in
Bill's house, or
in True Romance.
True Romance, it's True Romance. He goes to a Sonny Chiba Street Fighter marathon, and that's also written by Tarantino. So like, it's clearly him giving a nod to like an actor he really loves and giving him a job kind of thing.
I remember actually in college, I actually had a Street Fighter movie marathon.
I remember watching the first one once. I don't think I ever saw two, or I think the third one was Sister Street Fighter.
Yep. I watched them
two
with
mostly like the same thing.
More or less. There's one special effect that I'm never going to forget. Sonny Chiba punches a guy in the head. It goes to this x-ray shot, and you just see the skull collapsing. And then the guy just spits out blood, but it's not like a spit out like a dramatic. It's like he ate too much, and it's just sort of oozing out of his mouth. It looks so stupid. But it's so wonderful.
Isn't there a part where he pulls a guy's heart out of his chest at like the end of the movie or something?
He definitely like does some like ball ripping off. I swear that happens.
Oh yeah,
I swear. There's like the best part of that whole movie series, before I get off too much of a tangent on it, is that there's one black character and he only shows up to rape the main girl.
I remember this. I remember this. Yes. There's also one character, I'm pretty sure this is the Street Fighter, but he only ever yells like one word. He's like, Teddy! And it's so bad. But I remember watching these with my friend Pierce, my friend Adam, and my friend Brandon Chambers in the middle of the night. I think it was like first or second year. And we were just so tired. We're like, oh, we don't want to go to bed. We want to go to breakfast at this really greasy friggin' diner. Let's just watch kung fu movies all night. And I just remember watching all the Street Fighter movies and thinking they were like the coolest thing friggin' ever. But anyway, there's
my favorite movie.
Yeah,
we still haven't.
Yeah, go Dave, hit me.
Actually, I'm gonna go with probably the most popular, or maybe the boringest choice, depending on how you want to look at it. Pulp Fiction, I would say. Just it. For me, it barely outranks Inglourious Basterds. I think Inglourious Basterds is if Pulp Fiction is a 10, then Inglourious Basterds is like a 9.8 or a 9.9. So those two are almost tied at the top for me for Tarantino movies. But I think Pulp Fiction only wins really, I think, because it came first and kind of set the tone for all of his later movies. That it has like the weird non-linear storytelling you already talked about. It has a huge cast of characters, and even characters that show up just randomly for like one scene, like the lady who's driving the taxi in the one scene. Yeah. Like he gives proper screen time to like every character, even like the minor ones. And I think that was awesome. Like, that's one of the things I've always loved about Quentin Tarantino, is that there's no there's no boring characters in any of his movies.
Yeah, I mean, Pulp Fiction, it's one of those movies where, like you said, everybody gets enough screen time to at least make you remember them. Even the annoying as shit Bruce Willis wife gets enough screen time. You remember what she does, what she contributes. One of my favorite side characters from that movie is the Eric Stoltz drug dealer character.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, just stab her in the fucking heart.
Whenever I think of him, it makes me think of this YouTube video that's like Pulp Fiction, but redone with the Muppets. And it's all like Miss Piggy as blah, 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 and Kermit the Frog as like Bruce Willis's character or something. And then Eric Stoltz is still played by Eric Stoltz. He's the only one who's not replaced by a Muppet. Like Miss Piggy, Kermit the Frog, Fozzie Bear, and Eric Stoltz.
I would contribute to a Kickstarter to make this happen. I'm just saying.
That would be amazing.
You know what? I would love for Quentin Tarantino to do like a short Muppet segment or something. I just want to see what weird
or
shit
even just,
out of his
yeah,
mind.
Even just a cameo in the next Muppet movie.
You hear that, Quentin Tarantino? Get in a Muppets movie.
Please.
That would be amazing. I mean, like, we've seen him do, like, anime, which is, like, really interesting, too. So, like, it's clear that, like, he knows all of these genres. So, like, let's see you play around on one of them.
Well, there was supposed to be an anime Oren movie at one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And just
that would have been awesome.
Yeah, just think about how cool that could have been. I mean, I was so surprised to see that in the movie when it actually happened.
Yeah, I think that anime segment of Kill Bill was originally even longer, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so.
Cut down a little bit.
There were scenes added into the whole Bloody Affair, which was the two movies cut together as one.
Has that actually been released?
It was
not
shown
officially.
I don't think so. Anyway, the swing back to Pulp Fiction. One of the things I also really liked about that movie is it reinvigorated the careers of John Travolta, Sam Jackson, and Bruce Willis. I mean, Bruce Willis was starting to cool off, but I think like a year
later...
Yeah,
he was kind of just doing like diehard ripoff kind of things. Like it wasn't really... He didn't do much memorable in between 1988 and 1994.
And then Sam Jackson, that made his career, I would argue.
Yeah,
probably.
And then John Travolta, like I said, I only knew him from Look Who's Talking, and I guess to a lesser extent, Grease. So like John Travolta took the role serious. I mean, like, he actually hung out with heroin addicts to get their perspectives on things, which I thought was actually really neat as part of the acting process. He actually had an apartment across, I think, the way from Tim Roth for that movie, and Tim Roth is just, he's not in it very long, all things considered. But, you know, he really went in there to make Honey Bunny and the other dude really intense as shit sort of thing. So, I don't know, like, Pulp Fiction, I'm really glad I saw it at the right age I did, because I think that inspired me to take movies a little bit more seriously. So
Pulp Fiction 2 is a movie you notice little things in it each time you watch it. Like there's a lot of little details and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's quite a few good YouTube videos. I would recommend going to YouTube and look up like things you didn't know about Pulp Fiction if you're interested in that sort of thing, and you'll see like stuff that he puts into the background or the way he films certain shots that like,
yeah,
so like, much detail.
Exactly. I mean, like his movie, it's a lot like him. And what I mean by that is there's personality in almost everything. There's nothing that, you know, like, if you think about it, you know you're watching a Tarantino movie. You can't say, oh, this might be, I don't know, Rennie Harlan or something. You know it's him. If not by his dialogue, by the way the camera even moves, too. Even listening to sound effects, like, for to go back to Kill Bill, and I'm sorry to keep digging this grave deeper. But watching the fight in the crazy 88 tea house today, you could hear bowling alley sound effects in there. You can hear Wilhelm screams and all sorts of stuff yeah. like that. There's just little things like that I find amazingly funny, and I'm glad that he put in the movie because it just gives it life. And the fact that he collaborated with this editor for his entire career, Sally Menke, I think was hurting.
Oh,
him.
Yeah. Sally Menke.
And then she passed away a few years ago, which is tremendously sad, but.
Well, she and him made the Tarantino style. Like, the way that she edited everything, that's a synergy. You don't see that often.
I remember seeing an interview when I was taking a film class in college, and it was all about different editors. And Tarantino deliberately wanted to hire, I guess when he was cutting Reservoir Dogs, he deliberately wanted to hire a female editor because he saw the editing job as almost like a motherly kind of role. Like, you're almost like the mother of the movie, and you're kind of like, it's almost like a weird sort of birth analogy. And I guess because he knew he was going to be locked in a tiny room with like her and maybe two or three other people just editing this movie for such a long period of time, that he didn't want like another guy to be bashing heads with, I guess.
I could see that. And if go back and watch Ninja Turtles 1, because that was one of the first movies she ever worked on. And he said,
really? I didn't know that.
He said in a speech about Sally, go back and watch that movie. Donatello's not that good a fighter. And this made me believe that he was a badass or something along those lines. Like I said, it's so cool just to see that a guy like him could work with a person like that to create these visual masterpieces, and they're just and they don't have to be big set pieces with explosions or, you know, their characters sitting having coffee, but it's cut in such a way that it's not boring to the eye, nor is it uninteresting to the ear.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just amazing that he's seen so many movies and he's not pretentious about it. Like, he can appreciate, like, anything. And, like, just hearing him talk about how much he appreciates the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie. Like, that's awesome. Like, it's awesome that he has that level of, like, respect, and, like, he's not so full of himself that he can't be like, you know what, I enjoyed that cool, goofy-looking kids movie.
Like, there are so many cool things that I think he's contributed to the world of cinema. I know he's inspired a bunch of directors. And
he does this thing too, where he helps get like directors from other countries that he really likes. He helps to get their stuff released more widely in America. So I know there's been a bunch of kung fu movies and stuff that he helped get released over here.
Now, I guess as we begin to kind of close out this like episode, one of the big influences I think that he's given to movies is I think it's made indie movies a lot more visible, especially during the 90s. And I think he encouraged people to take risks on characters. If you're going to make them quirky, go ahead.
Yeah.
Like, give them something of substance. And I don't know, just since he's been in the movies, like, the past 20-something years, I don't know, cinema and film just seems a lot more, it's more personal. It seems more like a person now, as before it was just archetypes. To me, anyway, like, because I'm not like you guys who are super in the film. I know what I like, but when I look at how movies have changed since he's been around, you could argue there's been a pretty big change.
I think
those kinds of like Tarantino-esque characters existed in movies a long time ago, like in the 50s and 40s and 60s, and then it kind of went out of style, I guess, for like more realistic, like kind of more toned down characters with like movies that people like Woody Allen were directing in the 70s, and then Tarantino kind of brought that back.
At least into like the mainstream. I mean, you can argue aside from the Coen brothers, there's no one who uses the styles he does in to such an expert degree.
Now,
I have a a question, unless you had something really...
Oh, no. Go ahead.
I'm just wondering, your guys' opinion, what's a genre that Tarantino hasn't really done yet? Or maybe a time period or a style of movie that you would like to see him tackle?
I'd really like to see him do a crime thing in the 1930s.
That would be cool.
Imagine
like a Chicago gangland kind of crime movie.
Yeah, like picture him taking, and this is my own dream Tarantino movie. Imagine if you could somehow cross the crime drama of his previous movies, but take Al Capone from Chicago, have him fight Yakuza gangsters in San Francisco. So it's Kill Bill, but with guns and a crime drama. Think about how cool that could be. I mean, and I don't know, called Capone or something. I don't know.
Capone. Please don't call it Capone.
I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
But the Tarantino presents
Capone. It could be really cool, though. I mean,
just man.
Dual Tommy guns jumping through the air. I'm just saying.
I'd really like to see him. There's two that come to mind for me. One, I'd really like to see him just do a family movie. Like, where he just, like,
like
takes...
Three Men and a Baby.
No.
Directed by Tarantino.
Yeah, I don't know. Something like that. Like, something that, like, is family-friendly, but uses all his trademark techniques and his character-building styles and, like, just, like, put him in a different genre. Because can you imagine some of the weird kid shows he's watched? Like, I bet you there'd be so many references to Hey Vern, It's Ernest.
It would be... Yeah, it would be so, like, druggy. Like, it would be, it would like... Be amazing. It would be, like... Family TV from like the 70s when all the people who were creating it were clearly on drugs.
So basically Quentin Tarantino's HR Puffin stuff or the Electric Company. Actually, that might be actually kind of awesome if you got him to direct a live action version of the Electric Company. I just thought of a genre he's never touched before or kind of did. What if he did a racing movie?
Well, that would be interesting.
Yeah,
that'd be kind of cool.
Like, I think if it was like a period piece, like maybe set in like the early days of NASCAR, like if he did it in like the 70s or 80s or something, so you could get all those like classic old cars in there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of racing movies, but I remember loving Days of Thunder, and there was that Chris Hemsworth movie from last year that was all right.
Rush, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
so,
an underrated movie, just saying.
So, yeah, I mean, give Tarantino that, or maybe if you want to go back further. Oh, sorry, Andrew, go ahead.
Oh, what? I would love to see him do a giant monster movie, like a kaiju Godzilla film, because clearly he has the adoration for it. And the dude would go full practical. And the dude would have the money to do, like, amazing practical effects. And, like, he would just have, like, the most impressive giant monster fight ever put on screen.
I think if Tarantino did do a giant monster movie, it would be, like, 2.5 hours long. And the first 2 hours, there would be no monsters. It would just be, like, the people, like, losing their shit and trying to deal with, like, holy crap, there's monsters now. And then, like, the last half hour would just be the monsters fighting each other and, like, killing everyone.
That would be, like, the greatest movie ever, though. Because, like, he'd get all of the drama you can, like, milk. And, like, he would get, like, amazing actors to do it. And he would do it, like, really well. And, like, I'm sure he would take some, like, interesting view on like, a monster, like, invading kind of thing. Like, how people would react to it. And, like, he could like, set a typical movie that he would make, but, like, set it in that world. So, like, the giant monster doesn't even have to be pivotal to it. It just could be something that's happening while the characters are interacting.
I wouldn't mind seeing a romance come out of him, like, just to see what he could do. Cause...
Well, we had True Romance, although he didn't direct that, but it was...
Feet of Romance.
Yeah. Well, I was actually kind of thinking about this. Girl. I was watching Jackie Brown and and the Max Cherry character, Robert Forrester there. I don't know. I'd kind of like to see what Tarantino could do given a whole movie to develop a real romance between characters.
I think he'd do a good job, actually.
I think it'd be actually pretty decent, and it wouldn't be like, I don't know, Fever Pitch with Jimmy fucking Fallon. It would be something, I don't know.
Although Jimmy Fallon in a Tarantino movie would be...
It might actually work.
Weirdly amazing, yeah.
So
the thing similar to what Andrew was saying, but a genre I would love to see him do is like an alien invasion, like flying saucer sci-fi movie.
That would be amazing too.
But yeah, kind of similar to what we were saying with like the giant kaiju movie, like focusing more on the people trying to deal with this problem.
So if Quentin Tarantino could direct Plan 9 for From Outer Space.
Yes.
That would be fucking awesome. Fuck Tim Burton. I want this guy.
That would be amazing. I could just see him like having like a big conversation with somebody while someone's getting anal probed. Like it'd just be like this big conversation.
Whoa, you never thought I'd get in the ass before?
Actually, anal probing's not that bad. You get kind of used to it.
This is what we have to have.
After
happen.
A while, I start to enjoy it. Just saying.
And that's why you tip. So I guess, guys, this is kind of the end of our Quentin Tarantino salute to him. Like, you've given us interesting characters, endlessly quotable movies, which you'd be surprised how often I quote Sam Jackson in real life from Pulp Fiction with that whole, say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, motherfucker. Say what one more goddamn time. Or I'm a mushroom cloud laying motherfucker. I love that one especially. Like, thank you for your wonderful contribution. Thank you for being enthusiastic about movies and like, opening people's new eyes to it, for treating your crews really well, and just for being a fun guy. And even when he acts and stuff, like from Dusk Till Dawn, he actually did a bit part in a show called Alias, which is a show by J.J. Abrams. He plays this ex-operative guy named McKenna's Cole. And he's basically, it's Tarantino with a gun, but it's hilarious how much of the personality just kind of jumps off that. And I like to see him act and stuff because he just has this wonderful snarky charisma about him that I think is utterly infectious.
I think the best role that Tarantino ever acted in is in Planet Terror, where they're like on an elevator and he randomly shows up to like rape the main characters, but then he gets hit with like the Planet Terror disease or whatever and his dick falls off. And it's like the grossest scene in the movie, and it's amazing.
Andrew?
Wait, what am I supposed to say? Like, are we giving our summation?
You're supposed
like, I'm
to follow
to,
up I'm on try- me talking about dicks falling off.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was like.
Good
I'm
luck.
Like, dicks?
How do I follow that?
By falling off.
I mean, I love Tarantino. I mean, Tarantino is just always like, he's a good gateway drug. He's like a gateway drug to movies because everything he touches is like based off of something equally awesome. And like, you can just from watching his movies and from like going through the movies he references, the movies he talks about, you can almost do like your own little film school. Like Quentin Tarantino is like the syllabus of a film school. It's pretty impressive. I love him. Thank you, Tarantino. Bro hug.
So, guys, that's going to be our show for this month. So, once again, thank you guys for joining us. We're sorry that it's a few days late, but you understand with what happened with Dr. Wiley. So, if you, like I said, if you guys want to donate, check out the information below. Definitely would appreciate some help there. Next month, or this month, rather, we're going to be taking a look at the Road Warrior trilogy, Mad Max, because that movie comes out in just a few months. So, it's time to go beyond Thunderdome. For sure, and get some gas.
And find out who runs
who
Bartertown.
Who runs Bartertown? It's
gonna
Bartertown, Dave.
It's gonna be exciting. Bartertown. I'm really excited to check these movies out. I've never seen them before. Although, no,
they're definitely worth it.
I think I've seen maybe 5 minutes of Beyond Thunderdome. But anyway, guys, like I said, we're gonna do that in April. I'm not sure what we're doing for a show just yet, and I imagine in May we'll probably have something superhero related or taking a look at the big movies coming out this year, because Lord knows there is no shortage of those. So anyway, guys, for This Week in Geek, we have been...
David Andrew. Double D Dennis.
Andrew.
It's okay, just do it at the same time. There we go.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Andrew, there's a delay Roebuck.
I'm Mike the Birdman Dodd, and I'm going to go give my bitch a foot rub.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it!
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh my God, there's snot on my face. And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub. And I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? F*** that. 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico. Holy shit. Oh my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are
you?
Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listeners.